The Sunshine State, an industry hub for a growing field, life sciences, and BioFlorida is coming to Jacksonville. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Also right now, WJCT-FM is having some technical difficulties. We apologize for that. Our engineers are working on it. Just ahead, from technological breakthroughs to high-wage jobs, a look at the growth of life sciences in Florida. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Betty Griffinhouse marks Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Plus, Culpepper on the Jags' first win of the season in London over the Colts. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, we're going to take a look at what's called the life sciences. Now, over the past decade, Florida has built a robust life sciences industry, establishing itself as an industry hub with lots of potential for continued innovation and growth. This has really positively impacted the state's economy and created hundreds of high-wage jobs in the state. What is life science? Well, it involves the study of everything that is a living organism. The field encompasses such specialties as zoology, botany, even neuroscience, and more. There's a lot happening here. And the 2016 BioFlorida Conference, Florida's premier event for the life sciences community, is coming here to Jacksonville next week. With more about the importance of that for Jacksonville and the state, we welcome Conference Chair Jonathan Kanner, Vice President with RSNH. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And what are your questions about the life sciences and their potential for technological innovation and jobs in Florida? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. This is a big national conference, and it's the first time, I believe, that it's come to Jacksonville. So kudos to you, first of all.
Why, thank you. And you're absolutely correct. In 20 years, it's never been in Jacksonville before.
Usually South Florida, Central Florida.
It rotates. It's usually gone between Tampa, Orlando, Miami. But we're very proud to be able to bring it up here.
And that's a testament to Jacksonville's growth and its increasing attractiveness, I think, to a lot of these venues and events. But let's talk a little bit about what life sciences is. When I first heard this term, I had to kind of research it a little myself. What are the life sciences?
So really, the life sciences entail everything from the bench and research and development to the bedside in terms of patient care, and everything in between. And that could be the medical device that gets implanted, the surgeries that it takes to get them to that point, and the development of everything along the way. So it really covers the entire spectrum. So when we think about the life sciences, we have to think of it in the broad sense of everything that works towards improving health outcomes or research and development.
And that is something that, as Florida looks to expand its economy from its traditional three-legged stool of tourism, agriculture, and development, how do you see this sector sort of fitting in to creating jobs in the state in a new way?
So we absolutely believe that the three-legged stool, as you said, we need to improve that with the fourth leg, which we believe is the life sciences, which brings high-paying jobs to the state. So, maybe it makes us a little bit more recession-proof in the future. And we're able to, not just educate people, but actually grow companies and keep, the students that are actually coming through the schools here, mm-hmm. and keep them in the state instead of exporting all of our talent, which is one of the challenges that we have.
And this is a way to keep them here. Now, I tend to think of Mayo Clinic as maybe one of the premier companies that's leading in terms of life sciences, but that's probably just one example.
Mayo Clinic is one great example in our region, and each region has different examples that are just as great and exciting. Mayo Clinic here is just an absolute gem for Jacksonville, and the fact that they have been an integral part in helping us develop this conference has just been really, really exciting.
What would a life sciences job, there is no typical job, but what would a life sciences job be like? Name a field that might interest someone as they're just hearing about this for the first time.
Well, it could be really a lot of different things. It depends. So, it could be a biologist, it could be a chemist, it could be, the entrepreneur that just says, well, maybe there's what if idea, and how do I take that? And then they partner up with somebody to begin to develop it. So it really can cross the entire spectrum. Or somebody that maybe had, some sort of surgical procedure done at one point. point and said, well, what if we just did this a little bit differently? And maybe that becomes a new idea that can get developed.
And how did you end up getting involved in this? You work at RSNH, that's architecture and design. How did you get migrate all the way over to life sciences?
So about 10, 11, 12 years ago, I got started getting involved in designing laboratories. So really what happened is I started going to BioFlorida conference and becoming exposed to that. And what I learned over time is that the BioFlorida conference in general was just such a great venue to meet scientists, to meet CEOs, to meet just a wide range of people and learn more about what they're doing. And I'm a little bit of a lab geek at sometimes, so it's very fun.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment as we talk about the BioFlorida conference at 549-2937. Now, this kicks off beginning on the 9th of October. What all is going to be happening?
So it's really exciting. So on Sunday, we actually have the Mayo Symposium, which is going to be occurring out at the Mayo Clinic. We've got a number of great speakers that are going to be occurring out there, and that's in the early afternoon. And then following that, we're going to have a reception Sunday evening, followed by basically the kickoff Monday, where Mayor Curry is going to come out. He's going to give the opening keynote. And then we have a series of basically different sessions that are going to be going on throughout the day and wonderful keynotes. And then the conference will actually wrap up Tuesday afternoon. But the one unique thing about this is actually going to be a joint conference with Southeast Bio. So as we wrap ours up on Tuesday, theirs will actually pick up and continue on till Thursday. And Southeast Bio wraps includes North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, and Tennessee, I believe.
So it really is a Southeast player, and not only will the scientists be there, so will the venture capital.
Yes.
So in that sense, it will be not unlike OneSpark, which connected ideas with venture capital. How will that part of it work?
So it's exciting because one of the things that BioFlorida does is we have this thing called BioPitch. And what we do is we have early seed and early stage companies that are looking to basically try to get more funding or get funding for the first time. So they'll come in and they submit applications to be part of BioPitch. We narrow that down, and then the top four will actually make a pitch to investors at the conference, and then a winner will be selected out of that.
How much do they win? What's the kitty? What's the prize?
I think it varies from year to year.
Oh, really? But a significant kind of investment in whatever their idea is?
It's not I don't think it's a specific dollar amount. It's more to, you know, the idea is really to get them more connected with the investors.
Now, what are your hopes for this in terms of its impact on the local economy and also Jacksonville as an emerging player when it comes to these types of careers and this type of entrepreneurial spirit that I think the local tech hub has really tried to develop?
Well, you know, the life sciences in Northeast Florida employs about 90,000 people just in our region, and that's the hospitals to research and basically the entire spectrum. So there's a huge economic impact that goes with that. And what we're hoping is that more places and regions around the state and around the Southeast region begin to look at Jacksonville as a place where this is a great environment to actually develop life sciences and create companies here and bring them here. And as an example, Mayo's with Mayo Ventures is looking to do just that. I mean, they're trying to develop companies and help create that environment, that business savvy ecosystem that allows biotech companies to start here.
Then let's talk about that. Dr. Charles Bruce of Mayo Clinic couldn't be with us today, but he does head up Mayo Ventures. I tend to think of Mayo Clinic as primarily healthcare and the premier healthcare brand, perhaps, in many respects in this community. However, Mayo is more than that. Can you tell us a little bit about the business part of this for Mayo Clinic?
Well, I'll do my best. But with Mayo, what they've been able to do over the past few years is really broaden themselves out, and this is just my perspective on this, is broaden themselves out into the community and then begin to develop a strategy where they can do spin-off technologies and develop new companies that are just absolutely, just fabulous in terms of what the outcomes are going to be. So they've got one group out there right now called Therapeutics MD, which is developing lung regeneration. It's just phenomenal to hear and to see some of the things that they're developing out there. And whether it's personalized medicine or oncology, I mean, it's just a whole wide range. And, you know, I know you had Dr. Q a couple weeks ago. So there's a lot of different things that they're doing as a institution. But then they're also trying to figure out how do you begin to, you know, outreach into the community and develop that. And they have mm-hmm. become great community stewards.
So in a nutshell, what this event is really all about is improving people's health and even saving lives, which may not be obvious, but bringing all these minds together could definitely result in greater quality of life for a lot of people.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's funny because what we actually themed the conference this year is connecting the dots. So really, you know, a lot of what we do is, you know, if you got one person researching one thing here and another one and somewhere else, and then how do you bring them together to actually share that knowledge and maybe create something new, create a new synergy that, you know, could cure something or do something better.
Now this is coming up beginning on the 9th. Let's, share all the details for people. As you know, Jacksonville can sometimes be a walk-up town, so not too late for people to mark their calendars.
Absolutely not. And so the way the conference is usually set up is it focuses on three different tracks: bioscience, biotrends, and biobusiness. And this year, just to kind of give everybody a sense of it, some of the topics are going to be around medical technology, precision medicine, oncology, aging, neurodegenerative diseases, cell therapy, regenerative medicine, and this year, for the first time, we're actually introducing pediatrics and women's health. And then we have just a great variety of speakers, everything from different legislators that are coming in. We have the Surgeon General for the state of Florida, Celeste Phillip, that's going to be coming in and speaking. Mm-hmm. We've got, of course, Mayor Curry is going to be opening up. Aaron Bean's going to be here. So it's, you know, in terms of the political side of it, that's one thing. And then we actually have Peter Manzuzio, who's the president of North America Johnson & Johnson Vision Care, who's going to be one of the keynote speakers, along with Jim Rogers, who's the chair of Mayo Clinic Ventures. So there's just going to be a lot of great topics. And then on, of course, the investment side.
Lots happening. And again, this kicks off beginning October 9th, the first time the BioFlorida Conference has come to Jacksonville. Of course, that's due to the work of Jonathan Cantor, conference chair. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And learn more at bioflorida.com. Well, much more still ahead. Later, Cole Pepper will tell us about the Jaguars' win, finally yesterday, over the Colts in London. But up next, October marks Domestic Violence Awareness Month. More about what's being done locally to help women and children at risk. That's in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
WJCT is a community-supported station, and your contribution helps programs like our radio reading service for those who are visually impaired or have difficulty handling printed materials. If you'd like to specifically help radio reading, denote that on your check and send it to us at WJCT 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. And thanks for helping us give voice to the printed word.
Orion Weiss's favorite after-school activity became his vocation.
I knew I always wanted to do it, but I don't think I realized that it would become a career. It was just a joy when all of a sudden I realized I would be getting paid for doing what I love doing.
Orion Weiss doing what he loves, playing piano in concert on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join us as we celebrate a musical legacy that began more than a century ago. Blues Horizon, for the best in classic and modern blues, every Monday night at 11 p.m., only on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. Well, they've been helping the victims of domestic and sexual abuse since 1990. And this fall, Betty Griffin House is making some changes. It's timely because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Development Director Melinda Everson is here with more, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we want your calls and questions as we talk about the importance of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You can join the conversation at 549-2937. And in a moment, we'll talk about everything that's going on at Betty Griffin Center, no longer Betty Griffin House. But first, domestic violence, I think awareness of that issue has increased exponentially in the last few decades, along with the way we handle and try to address the issue. This has been an awareness month for some time now, and it's a time to talk about this and really be open about it because silence is what perpetuates it.
Absolutely. It's that dirty little secret that people just, they put up with, or they're always asked the question, why doesn't she just leave, or why don't you just leave? Instead of asking the question, well, why does he do that? And I shouldn't always say it's he. Sometimes it's her.
Sometimes it can be a woman abusing a man.
It certainly can.
And, you know, whenever we do this topic, we typically do get at least one call. And not always from a man, but usually saying, I don't understand why women don't just leave their abusers. Can you explain some of the reasons why?
It's different for everybody. Abusers are highly manipulative. And if you have children, that can be one of the tools. It can be financial, and it's usually a progression of a breakdown of control over so many areas of your life. If you're a victim, it's really hard to leave. And, you know, they're very convincing a lot of times that it'll be different this time, I promise. And unfortunately, it doesn't change.
Right. And tell us a little bit about the history of Betty Griffin House in this area. And by the way, you're changing your name to Betty Griffin Center this month. How does Betty Griffin House try to help women and men and children who are at risk?
There's a multitude of ways, and that's the reason we changed from house to center, because we wanted people to know that we do more than just shelter victims. We have education in our schools, teaching children of all ages about the dynamics of stalking, domestic violence, sexual abuse. We have a rape crisis unit in Flagler Hospital that's very private and tailored to the needs of the victim. We have confidential free counseling for survivors of domestic or sexual assault. And we do have our shelter. We have transitional housing to help our families move from shelter into their own independent lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. That's the most immediate logistical challenge, isn't it, for so many? Finding a place to stay, a safe place with their children, if there are children.
Especially in St. John's County, housing is so very expensive. It's really hard if you haven't worked in a really long time, and you go out and get a job that pays $9 or $10 an hour, you can't make it in St. John's County. You cannot rent an apartment for less than $1,000 a month.
So how do you help women in that situation?
Well, we have wonderful advocates that help victims look at their resources. And it might be out of town, out of state, whatever. But we also try, if education is where their needs lie, we try to help them pursue that avenue. Whatever the resources might be, we try to help them look at that. But our transitional housing program is wonderful in that our families who leave shelter that maybe don't have the finances yet to transition into their own independent living, we have 6 apartments. They can house families up to 2 years.
In October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Have you ever asked the question, why doesn't she just leave? What are your questions and comments about Betty Griffin Center's efforts to help women and men who have been the victim of domestic violence? The number to join us is 549-2937. Now, for more than 2 decades, you've been established in St. John's County as Betty Griffin House, but you are rebranding. You are now Betty Griffin Center.
Yes, we are. We're doing that because we want to share the fact that we are much more than a house. We're much more than shelter, and that we offer a wide range of services that are free to the community.
And in Duval County, Hubbard House is known as the place, the location is secret, by the way, for very good reason. In St. John's County, it's Betty Griffin, and I assume that's the same situation for you. It's an undisclosed location.
It absolutely is. And yeah. If you asked me right now, what is the address, I personally couldn't even tell you.
Really? Why?
I've never committed that to my memory. I know where it is.
Right.
But I could not give you the address. So if somebody was holding me hostage, I'd be in big trouble.
but the reason for the secrecy is you're trying to ensure the safety of someone who might be literally running for their lives. Yeah.
Our advocates do life-saving work. They truly do. And unfortunately, the lethality of these cases has increased over the years. It's such a sad thing to see. And yeah, we have high security, and we have lots of support from the local police, and yeah, it's an undisclosed.
And when you say the lethality has increased, let's talk about that. What are you seeing?
We're seeing more murder-suicides than we ever used to.
Where, say, the husband or boyfriend kills his partner and then turns the gun on himself.
Correct.
What do you think's driving that?
Personally, I don't really know. I don't know if it's you could talk about gun control. That might be it. I don't really know. It's definitely a power and control issue, but
that's really when a woman or a man is trying to break a cycle of an abusive relationship. It's trying to break coercive control.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit more about the dynamics of that and what you see when you're trying to help someone exit that sort of relationship?
Again, it's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. That might have started early in the relationship and progressed rather slowly. You know, we have people who talk about that. We also have people who talk about it was like that from the beginning, but maybe that's what they grew up with, and they don't realize that is domestic abuse. And sometimes domestic abuse is emotional abuse. It isn't just physical.
Yeah, and financial abuse can mm-hmm. be a big part of this too. The National Purple Purse Initiative is designed, and by the way, purple is the color of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The Purple Purse Initiative is a way to help women claim some economic independence so that they aren't the victim of financial abuse.
Yes, it is, and it's a wonderful program. You know, I think that's another thing. We're having a lot more, it's worth discussing, a lot more awareness on the celebrity level. The No More campaign has come out. You know, there's a lot of negative press as far as the NFL and what's been going on there. So I think people are talking about it more, and I think that's why you're seeing more people come for services. Our services last year increased dramatically. Our counseling services, the demand for that went up 130%.
And do you attribute that to just increased awareness as well as increased demand? More people are aware of you.
I think it's a combination.
Yeah.
I really do, and our county is growing.
And as we speak with Betty Griffin Center, the premier location for services in St. John's County, for those who are trying to escape an abusive relationship, we want your calls and questions right now about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The number to join us, 549-2937. And if you want to share your own personal story, even if it's painful to talk about, we want to hear it. Let's go to Dave in Nassau County. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Monday, if there is such a thing.
Right,
exactly.
My question
is quite simple. Oftentimes, in relationships, it's not only children that are used as pawns in an abusive relationship, but pets as well. Do you also have accommodation for pets?
Oh, what? That's an interesting question. Thanks for that.
That is true. Sometimes people are manipulated by the love of their pets. And we have a relationship with the local shelter, and they help us with fostering, getting pets into foster, and also, holding on to them until the victim can finally get on their feet and get their pet back.
And whether it's a pet or a child, that bond can really hold a person in place because they're concerned about the welfare of the children, typically.
Sure.
How do you work with women in that situation?
Well, of course, it could be a tool. Whatever you care about can be a tool of manipulation. So, unfortunately, it does happen with children's pets. You know.
Here's an email for you from Rob. Betty Griffin Center is an amazing organization. I have a friend who was in an abusive relationship, and this place was a godsend. Her dog actually intervened with her abuser to protect her and suffered injuries. Are there facilities where the victim can take her pet with her? Another pet question.
Right.
You will help with animals as well as people.
Absolutely.
Here's a tweet for you. What should someone do if they are the abuser? How can they try to change their ways?
Wow. That's not a question we get very often at all. Mm-hmm. It's usually a denial of responsibility. I would say go get some mental health counseling. There, obviously, there's a deep-seated issue there for with your control, your power and control. And I'd say go get some professional help and back away from your victim. Leave them alone.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, so much emphasis is on helping the victim. But increasingly, we are seeing movements and programs around the country, some of them even in prison, designed to help men break the cycle of their abusive behaviors. Are you optimistic that those can be successful?
I don't know as far as what the statistics say on the adult level, at the prison level, if that can change. I do know that children often don't know what they're witnessing at home. They wouldn't necessarily call it domestic violence. My parents are fighting, or that's just how they do it. And that's, we're in the schools. We're giving like 12,000 presentations a year, and you know, if you count students. And we're trying to let the kids know, this is not right, and this is what this is. Let's mm-hmm. name it. Mm-hmm. And it's illegal, it's wrong, and you know, we try to really work with the kids and start at an early age. So we're trying to do some prevention on this end.
Lots of calls now about Domestic Violence Awareness Month for Betty Griffin Center. Haley on the north side. Hi, Haley. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A good friend of mine from high school, he's a Marine, and he was married. They are now divorced, but he was abused in his marriage quite badly, actually. She would not just physically, but psychologically. And he and his daughter, he has full custody of his daughter now, but he often speaks about the stigma associated with men being abused. And people often wonder, how is that even possible? Or he gets made fun of by other people. So I was wondering if there are any resources for men in particular, just because it's such a taboo topic or area of abuse.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Haley. Thanks for that call. And that's true. What about men in the situation?
It's sad that it's a part of our culture that he should have to feel shame because he was abused. And it, yeah. Unfortunately, that's kind of the dynamics, that he's more powerful, so he shouldn't be abused. You know, it sounds like he's not an abuser himself, so he's not going to hit her back, or he's not going to play that game. He's not going to meet her at her level. So good for him. He should be proud of that. And, you know, if you're looking for resources, contact your local domestic violence agency. Our hotline number is 904-824-1555, 24 hours. But if you're in Duval County, that's Hubbard House. But yeah, call and talk to a counselor.
But whether it's a man or a woman in the situation, the common denominator, it seems, is shame. There's a lot of shame and embarrassment about being in the situation.
And that's why a victim doesn't own it usually, or they don't go tell their family, or they might tell them one time, this is what happened, and they get shamed. Well, why do you stay, and why do you do this? You know, they get shamed for staying, they get shamed for leaving. It's just, you're right, it's a stigma in our culture that really just needs to go away.
We want your calls about Domestic Violence Awareness Month at 549-2937. Billy is in St. Augustine. Hi, Billy. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I actually recently started a relationship not long ago with a girl, and I was surprised at what she had kind of been through with cyber stalking and how abusive and kind of rattled she had been through this like previous relationship. And I was surprised at how little response there really was like in place for her and any kind of support. And I was wondering if, you know, when talking about domestic violence and programs that are put in place for it, if there's any kind of preemptive education on that, and if the Betty Griffin Center does anything in support of those kinds of situations, as I feel abuse has grown a little bit from just physical as well. And I was just wondering their take on it.
Yeah, thanks for that, Billy. Cyberstalking, big problem.
It is a big problem. Mm-hmm. There's one more way to demonize your victim. We do have services wrapped around the stalking issue. We have events going on. Stalking Awareness Month is in January. We have events going on where we do education. We have brochures on how you can prevent technologically being stalked.
Which is difficult.
Yeah.
And what about his comment that there isn't a lot of teeth legally to what can be done to stop someone
well,
from engaging in that?
Unfortunately, it's like with a lot of crimes, until the actual crime has happened. And it's new technology. It's stalking via your phone is kind of a newer thing. So until there's some kind of precedent set, I think that it gets kind of hung up there.
Zoe in St. Augustine. Hello, Zoe. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I was just going to comment that I don't know how I would have been able to leave the verbally abusive relationship that I was in another state without my parents' support. I don't know how people do it otherwise, or how upset I get when I realize that people I know have been treated poorly by their spouses or boyfriends or girlfriends or whatever, and they don't realize that it's not right. Like, it's that's how you grow up, and you think that you deserve to be treated that way, and you just go about your life like it's funny, but it's not.
Yeah. So your parents were helpful to you. That's great.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what other people do. If they're not listening to this, I don't know that they know there's another way.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Zoe. People need to reach out to you at Betty Griffin. They need to reach out to anyone that can help them.
Absolutely.
And not be afraid to do so.
Absolutely. That's why we're here.
Richard in Duval County. Hello, Richard.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. I've been listening to the show, and I'd like to give some input as a former abuser myself. I'm certainly not proud of the fact, but in my situation, I was married for 25 years. Most of that time I was in the military, and I couldn't stand being in the military, so I took it out on my spouse. But if you want to know why women don't leave, my wife was an educated, college-educated woman, and she had, we went to counseling. I've been in counseling for 10 years, but she had absolutely nowhere to go. A couple of three times we were stationed overseas. I mean, it's not like she could have just bought a plane ticket and left. And she realized that going to my employer, the military, would instantly, stifle my career, and that would affect her too, because she was looking forward to the retirement end of the career also.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that and being so honest. So what finally prompted you to change and go into counseling?
Well, I tell you, I knew I had a problem the whole time. I would be, I'm 6'1". My wife's like 5'5", 5'6", but I would abuse my wife, mostly yelling and screaming, a little pushing. And then afterwards, I would feel so horrible, terrible. I was suicidal. And I did seek counseling, but it's just that I took the pressure of work home and just took it out on her because there was nothing else to do. I knew I had a problem, and I worked on it. And then finally she called my command, and it did abruptly put my career down the tubes, but I deserved it. But I knew I had a problem, and I felt terrible. So I wish, everybody thinks that an abuser is a monster. I knew I had a problem, and I felt terrible every time it happened. Sought counseling, but it's not something that you can turn off, because I grew up watching my mom get abused, watching my grandmother get abused, but those were generations in the past. So it's not everybody that is an abuser is not does this intentionally. I know there's a lot of drug and alcohol use involved. That wasn't my case, but I mean,
yeah,
I sought help, and I'm still in counseling for 10 years.
Well, thanks for
not no instant cure.
Thank you for sharing that, Richard. Thank you for that. Okay. Is change possible? It sounds as though he's trying to change.
It sounds as though he is. He did own it.
And that's the first step, is acknowledging what's happened. And
abuse always is a choice, though. It always is a choice.
Yeah. And it's been so fascinating to listen to the callers on this. Betty Griffin Center, the former Betty Griffin House, is in St. Johns County. As we talked about, it's not an address we're going to give over the air. But if people need to contact Betty Griffin Center, that's easy to do.
It is easy to do. We have a helpline, 24 hours, answered by certified advocates. The number is 904-824-1555.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Melinda Everson, Development Director with Betty Griffin Center. In October does mark Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Much more still to come. We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, across the country, more than 200 million Americans could be affected by ballot measures up for votes this fall. They address issues like gun control, the minimum wage, and marijuana legalization. Key ballot measures and how citizens are driving many of them.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
I'm Jackie Carter, Executive Secretary for Duval County's Emergency Operations Center. Have a plan for home, work, and school. Planning can save you valuable time and money in a disaster. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
Welcome back. Well, WJCT's annual Teach Conference coming up this weekend brings together teachers from all across the First Coast to talk about what's going on in their classrooms and the issues educators face. If you're a teacher or you have a loved one or a friend who's a teacher, make sure to mark your calendar for this. It's coming up Saturday. Honorary Chair Susan Severett is here to tell us all about this year's Teach Conference 2016. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And this is just incredible for all of our wonderful local teachers. A day-long event just for them. Really exciting.
It is really exciting. It's actually a pretty amazing initiative that was WJCT and Community First Credit Union co-sponsor this amazing event dedicated for teachers and their profession.
And when we talk about what's going on in the classroom and the issues teachers are dealing with, this is really resources for teachers to deal with all the various challenges they're seeing in their profession. Can you tell us what's on the agenda?
Absolutely. Well, first, to give an overview, the motto is to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. And we try to do all of that when we're planning for the conference. And we try to really cover a broad variety of topics. So we encourage a broad range of teachers to come. So, for example, we have conference sessions on bullying, on working with English language learners, on use of technology in the classrooms.
Wow, a lot. There's a lot happening.
Yes.
Now, you're the honorary chair. You're an associate professor at UNF and also professor in residence at the Urban Professional Development School at Woodland Acres Elementary. And you're even developing a school in Belize.
Yes, I am.
Amazing.
Yes, thank you.
Why Belize? What's going on there?
Oh, UNF has had a 30-year relationship in the country of Belize. We have educated over 600 Belizean individuals, and the current Prime Minister of Education is Patrick Faber, is a UNF graduate.
Uh-huh.
So I secured a $90,000 grant with colleagues to continue a kind of different collaborative work, developing university school partnerships in Belize.
Very nice.
Thank you.
You'll be sharing your insights as well with everybody who attends. And, teachers, I think, maybe can sometimes feel isolated in their classrooms, too. This is a way for them to get together and have some fellowship and share ideas.
Oh, absolutely. A time to get together. And the conference is just top-notch. And so a time to get together and get energized. I can't emphasize that enough because the conference presenters are often teachers who have won Teacher of the Year, and people who really, truly love their profession and are making a difference in the lives of children.
And it can be hard to maintain that energy and that excitement with all of the issues from funding to politics to testing. You really want to, this is sort of giving teachers a shot in the arm, isn't it? A boost.
Yes, hopefully, yes. Yeah. It is a tough time with accountability and the standards and the assessments, and but the profession is the best. And so being energizing and taking away, the conference will give takeaways where they can really make differences in their classrooms.
What are some key takeaways? Can you give us a sneak peek on some of the things you're going to be leaving them with?
Well, we have two awesome keynote speakers, Pedro Negrera and George Kuros. And Pedro is invested in our racial inequality, and he's a very distinguished scholar. And so he'll bring a voice that we definitely need to hear in Jacksonville. And so I hope that energizes people to work with the inequities that exist in our schools.
Uh-huh.
And then David is George is a principal leader. And he really is into innovativeness and creativity and how you bring that into your classroom. And so he's our ending keynote. So it should be, the walkaways just from our keynotes in general will be fantastic. But then the individual session, whether you learn about children with autism or how to use technology in your classroom or learn about bullying, there'll be a lot of walkaways.
A lot happening. And again, it's the 2016 Teach Conference coming up this Saturday, October 8th at the Downtown Hyatt, WJCT's annual conference for teachers. This is open to all teachers, prospective teachers, and anyone interested. Register now at wjct.org/teach. Honorary Chair Susan Severed joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And in a moment, Cole Pepper, as the Jaguars finally win a game in London, no less. From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
Hi. I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
If you're looking for the best blues show, look to the Blues Horizon. Each week, join me for the best blues, both classic and contemporary. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT 89.9 FM radio. Take a ride with us to some unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 FM. So many roads.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars finally got into the win column yesterday.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The Jaguars with a big 30-27 victory over the Indianapolis Colts in London. Here with more about the game and this weekend's other sports news and notes. Cole Pepper here with us. Good morning. And
good morning.
Lots of excitement at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, second straight year the Jaguars have won their game in London. And by the way, they will be returning to London the next 4 years as well. Shad Khan has really embraced this opportunity to take the Jaguars over there. Of course, he also owns a soccer team in London, Fulham, a football club. So, but on the Jaguars, they were up by 17, tried to give it away, did their very best, but were able to hang on and beat the Colts 30-27, as you mentioned. So what does it mean for Gus Bradley? Well, it means that for now the Wolves stay at the door, and he will keep his job. He's not getting fired, obviously. The bye week comes up this week, and then you know, we'll see after that. But I think it does buy him a little bit of rope here.
Sure.
If he had lost, if the Jaguars had lost, I don't think necessarily you could have said that, depending on how the game would have gone. An 0-4 start would have been pretty much calamitous. Now, 1-3 teams have occasionally made the playoffs.
We can hope.
Including the 96 Jaguars, you'll recall.
Well, I didn't recall it, but I knew you would.
Yes, yeah.
Now, with them signing this deal and Shad Khan inking this deal to keep them at Wembley till 2020, how is London embracing the American style of football over there? How are they embracing the Jaguars?
Yeah, I think those are two different questions.
Okay.
How are they embracing football and how are they embracing the Jaguars? I would say that based on using a baseline of before the Jaguars started going over, there are more people who are Jaguars fans in the UK. In fact, there's a fan group called the Union Jacks.
Very nice.
Conveniently enough. And there are some, and you see a lot of folks wearing Jaguars jerseys in the game. I did also detect a guy wearing a San Francisco 49ers Blaine Gabbert jersey at the game. I'm not sure if that was a political statement or not, but London's a huge city.
Yeah,
obviously.
They have lots of choices.
A lot of choices for sports, a lot of it soccer and otherwise. But even if they're American, I think they're growing the American football fan base in general. Right now, as it stands right now, these games are more events than they are competitions for the people in London. Yeah. Think the difference between the Gators playing a game in Gainesville and the Florida Georgia game. Right, the Florida Georgia, yes, it is a competition and it matters, but it's really a social event more than anything.
Sure, it's a see and be seen thing.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways it's still that at Wembley Stadium. It's going to be interesting going forward because they're playing multiple games in the UK now in the NFL, including at some other stadiums. You know, Wembley is sort of the national stadium there in London, and so as they start playing in some other parks, including Tottenham Hotspur's new soccer stadium, we'll see how the reaction is and how the reception is around town.
Well, in the meantime, congrats to the Jaguars. Let's talk college football. Florida winning ugly over the weekend, beating Vanderbilt 13-6. The Gators host LSU Saturday.
Yeah, and then I think all three of the big state teams, it's interesting to see, plus Georgia. FSU lost for the second straight time to North Carolina, 37-35 on a 54-yard field goal by the Tar Heels. Seminoles will travel to Miami on Saturday night. Miami is suddenly something to be contended with. Mark Richt, the former Georgia coach, now the head coach at Miami, has the Hurricanes into the top 10. Georgia lost a heartbreaker when Tennessee caught a Hail Mary with no time remaining to win 34-31. The Dogs go to South Carolina on Saturday. 10 teams in the polls this past week lost, so a lot of change. Alabama still on top with Ohio State number 2. Clemson's number 3 after hanging on to beat Louisville in a terrific game. Michigan number 4, Washington number 5, Tennessee up to number 9. Miami, you mentioned, in the top 10 for the first time since 2013. Florida moves up 5 spots. FSU moves down 11, but they're both still in the top 25. And these are going to be important rankings because, as you know, at the end of the year, the college football playoff takes into account these rankings for the Final Four teams.
Sure. And my parents in Dayton will be very happy about the Ohio State ranking at number 2, by the way.
Urban Meyer, the former Gator coach there, getting it done.
All right. The Armada, you're the voice of the Armada, of course. They won, you say, what might be their greatest victory in their history Saturday.
Yeah, Matt Boehner scored his third goal of the season in the 88th minute to help the Armada beat Minnesota United 1-0 Saturday night. I say it's their greatest victory because Minnesota had only lost 5 home matches in the previous 3 seasons. They have one of the more talented rosters in the North American Soccer League. It's also Mark Lowry's second road victory as interim head coach. The previous year and a half, 4 different coaches couldn't manage to win away, and Minnesota United is going to MLS next year, so this will be the last opportunity for the Armada to play a league match against Minnesota United. So it was a big win, really gives them some momentum as they get set to come home to face Indy 11 on Saturday.
And 2 more news and notes, the Ryder Cup and the Web.com Tour.
The U.S. wins the Ryder Cup over Europe. The highlight for me was the post-match photography because you have all the U.S. team, and they're up on the stage with their wives and girlfriends and whatnot, and they're doing kind of a celebration kiss, and there's one guy, Ricky Fowler, who is single, who is sitting standing in the middle of this crowd with this shrug look on his face. It is, if you get a chance to check out the photo, it is a great photo.
And at least you made the best of it.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of, well,
you made a joke out of it.
Listen, he's a Ryder Cup champion and one of the top golfers in the world. Probably is doing okay for himself.
Now, the web.com tour here in our area is also really growing in terms of its prominence in the golf world.
Yeah,
would you say?
I think it's starting to establish itself as the premier event on that tour, which is the next tour down from the PGA Tour, and having it here in Jacksonville, Atlantic Beach Country Club, a chance to really showcase that great course. If you want to get up close and really watch pro golfers, guys who are battling to get to the PGA Tour, you want to see the finer points of the game. Sometimes, you know, you go to the Players Championship, for example, sometimes it's hard to get right up close because of the crowds. You can get right up close here at the web.com Tour Championship this week.
Follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Listen to the Sam and Cole podcast while you're at it. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And next on Diane Rehm, across the country, more than 200 million Americans could be affected by ballot measures up for vote this fall, looking at everything from gun control to minimum wage and marijuana legalization. There's one of those here in Florida. Key ballot measures and how citizens are driving them. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.